It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed at the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John Graney.
Good morning, Larry Lexo. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, too. We survived another one.
Yeah, it was actually, as I get older, my New Year's become less exciting. My wife was actually working. The kids and I, well, the kids were fine staying up till midnight. I was the one struggling, and we did the countdown, and then I sent everyone to bed. That was it.
That's about what it takes.
Yep, they used to be a lot more fun, but anyway, but the next day I felt perfectly fine.
Well, there is something to be said for that.
So
yeah, we stayed out. We made it till midnight, uneventful, and then slept in the next day and just kind of took it easy, took a little time. It was nice having an extra day off after New Year's Day to do nothing.
I did. I kind of hibernated for a little bit. I can understand why some of our furry friends like to do that. I enjoyed that. But I am back, ready to go, and rumor has it we have to do an hour now.
That's what they tell me. We did so well on the rest of it, they decided they want some more rhetoric.
At some point they're going to catch on that we're having fun, and they're going to maybe take it away from us. But anyway,
don't tell them.
Folks, we are going to be on for an hour now, and while we were hibernating and thinking about things, we came up with, it's a change to the format. Actually, we have to come up with stuff to talk about for 60 minutes as opposed to 30. So the way we're going to do this going forward is we're going to have a couple different segments. We will be looking for sponsors for these segments. Hint, hint. We'll have the introductions, and then we'll do what's called market talk, where we'll talk about some things going on in the market. Then we'll have the topic of the day, which will be based on the way the old show was, where we talked 30 minutes about a certain topic. And the Chef Shop is our sponsor for the topic of the day. And then we're going to wrap it up with strange news stories indeed. And this is where you get to participate. Larry will present a strange news story. I will present a strange news story. And then we will ask you guys to go to our website and vote. And then based on who won, we will then pick a name from whoever won and send you a t-shirt. So if Larry's news story wins, Larry will randomly select a name from the people that voted for that topic. And then we will send that person, contact a person, and get him a Financial Cafe t-shirt. Highly coveted Financial Cafe t-shirt.
Can I have one, John?
No, employees of the radio station are not permitted.
Oh, bummer.
So, but I think we can wear them and call it marketing.
Yeah, it sounds good to me.
All right. So with that said, in market talk, we are going to discuss. Do you have anything you want to add?
The market.
I don't mean to dominate the talk here, but do you have anything you need to add to the segments, market, the new show?
The segments are going to be kind of divided up, as John was talking about, market talk, topic of the day. We'll try and get into some specific of the news of the past week or weeks, month, maybe even, especially as we go forward with the new Trump administration. A lot of exciting things coming out of there on a day-to-day basis.
Exciting is one way to put it.
Exciting things.
I'm going to go with unpredictable.
Your perspective. Very unpredictable. No one knows, I think, including Trump, what's going to happen next. So, at least that, in my opinion, that's a good thing. I think
unpredictable and Twitter.
Assessing things.
You're going to be the buzzwords for 2017.
Twitter is going to be, I guess I need to tweet something. I don't know.
I do have an account. I have never used it, or I have a hard enough time keeping up with LinkedIn. I don't even do Facebook.
Well, you're one up on me. I've got the LinkedIn and Facebook, but I do not have a Twitter account, and I guess I need to do that just to stay up on what the country is doing.
Well, the news tells us what he tweets, so yeah, that's good enough for me.
It's not colored at all in terms of their own thoughts or position, is it, John?
No. So Market Talk, which does not have a sponsor yet.
Hint, hint.
I'm just going to let that hang there for a dramatic pause. Yeah, does not have a sponsor yet. Yet. But what we're going to discuss in Market Talk this show is looking at 2016. What was the end result with the market performance? And then looking forward, what can we expect out of 2017? Looking at, according to Morningstar, I pulled up their 12/30 numbers. The Dow Jones was up, and this is total return, was up 16.5%. The S&P 500 was up 11.96. The S&P mid-cap was up 20.74. The small-cap index, the Russell 2000, was up 21.31. Corporate bonds were up about 5.81. And intermediate-term bonds, 4.56. High yield was up 17. Really, the only, as we were just talking about, the only broad category category would be international, and the world index excluding U.S. was up 2.75. So all in all, it wasn't a bad year.
It wasn't a bad year at all, and for anyone who was indeed in the market, not afraid of what was coming with the elections and the uncertain but now outcome that we're dealing with, that if you had an overall well-balanced portfolio, you should have seen some positive numbers, even if you were more conservative than many. The one area that was down in 2016, which is interesting, I'm not sure how to define that, was healthcare. A lot of the healthcare stocks did not perform well last year. So that may be indicative of what's coming in the year 2017 and ahead, especially with the discussion on Obamacare, and my personal opinion is I don't know how it can be completely repealed. I think there are segments of it that are too far embedded into the insurance companies and the economy that you're going to see a complete repeal. But I do hope that there are going to be a number of changes applied to it. We were able to go from an individual health plan, which I had for last year with Coventry. Coventry is no longer writing, as many of you know, in Illinois, underwriting any medical health coverage. So we're, guess what, back at Blue Cross Blue Shield. The cost on a small group plan, which we qualified for, was not a lot more than it was the year before, interestingly enough. But talking with many individuals and even some physicians, with people who are on the Affordable Care Act, who have Obamacare, one of the issues they have is, yeah, they have the card, and yes, they can go see the physician, but unfortunately, with the coverage they have under Obamacare, they can't do any tests. It won't pay for any. Because of the high deductible, you're looking at several thousands of dollars in costs to do blood work, to do x-rays, to do medical diagnosis. So, great, you went to the doctor, and he saw you and said, yeah, you got a problem, but we can't figure out what it is because you don't have the money to pay for it, and the Obamacare won't pay for it. So I'm not sure you're any better off than you were before, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Healthcare sector was down. It was down about 3.5%, and that was completely attributed to Obamacare. And that's not a political position. That's just, you know, the way
fact.
It is. The cost for, you had insurance companies dropping coverages like crazy, pulling out of different markets and so forth. Here in Illinois, the Land of Lincoln insurance provider went belly up, is gone. And that was, Illinois spent millions and millions of dollars getting that set up because they got all the federal funding because Obama was a senator here. So Illinois got a lot of funding for that. And it didn't work. It just didn't work. So, and I think healthcare going forward is actually going to be a good thing. I think I agree with Larry that they will, to actually come in and actually repeal it all. Well, first of all, any changes they make won't be until 2018. So, But for them to come in and say we're going to repeal this and get rid of it completely is just not going to happen. And I think if they make tweaks and modifications to it, it could actually work very well. My biggest angst with Obamacare was the fact that states, you couldn't have insurance companies go across all states. And that needs to happen to drive competition, which will drive prices down. And until that happens, it's still going to be a joke, in my opinion.
Well, and the federal government, a little history on that, is going to have to step in. The laws, some of the past.
No!
Yeah, sorry, John.
What are the five words you don't want to hear from the government?
We're here to help you.
We are here to help.
You know, we do share a lot of common thoughts. That's true. Great minds think alike, you know. But the federal government regulated insurance company control to the states. And that is the problem, because Illinois has their Department of Insurance that Blue Cross and the rest of them have to submit to and be approved for any rate changes, for coverages, for the... Whether you even want to be in the state. And Missouri does their own thing, and Arkansas does their own, and Iowa, and Nebraska, you can go ahead. So unfortunately, unless the states finally get together and do some sense of reciprocity, that's my word for the new year, there is not going to be any cross-state line coverage. And, you know, it's really a shame when you're sitting in an area such as we are here at the beautiful WSIE in Edwardsville, Illinois. We're 20 minutes from downtown St. Louis in the Arch, but that river is wide, and we go over to the Missouri side, and all of a sudden it's a whole different ballgame.
It's a continental divide.
It is continental, literally and figuratively, because as soon as you cross that Mississippi, the wide Mississippi, the rules change. Everything changes in Missouri from Illinois, and until there's some cooperation of the coverages, that is going to be a major issue for healthcare as we go forward. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I'm hoping that we have a relatively quiet year and agreement that I don't think anything's going to change in 2017, but it will gear up maybe for some things that will take effect in 2018. We'll get through this year and hopefully without any major issues. I'll fund my HSA for myself and my wife. We'll put that money aside. Hopefully we don't need it, have any major issues, because with a high deductible plan.
You are getting older, Larry.
The first $6,000, $6,250 to be exact, John, are out of pocket. And I really don't want to spend that. But nevertheless, yeah, every day I am getting a little older. But, John, so are you.
Yeah.
So, you know, we do the best we can with what we've got.
So to take us away from the healthcare discussion, 2016 actually was one of the slowest starts ever. If we can remember back to January, the market was abysmal.
Wow, that was scary.
I was on the ledge with a lot of people thinking, oh my gosh, this is going to be a bad year. My hopes were that the election would bring things around, creating that uncertainty, which ended up happening. Now I'm equally concerned because we had such a massive run-up at the end of the year. The market in the last 6-7 weeks of the year was up almost 9%. If we were to annualize that number, that would come out to about 155% or so return for the stock market.
I'll take it.
On an annual basis. That is not sustainable. That is not even possible. So that has me nervous. We also had our first interest rate hike in almost a decade. So with that, you know, quick recap of 2016, what are we looking at in 2017? And if anyone tells you that they know what's going to happen in the market, they are lying. My word for 2017 is going to be unpredictable. Larry's on record with reciprocity, so we'll see what happens. But we have some big-time competing forces going on in 2017. The new buzzword is Trumponomics.
I like it.
We have Trump's position on a lot of things. He's going to reduce personal income tax. He wants to take it back down to 33%. He's going to reduce the corporate income tax. All that's good. That is pro-economic growth, pro-business. You have, you know,
pro-jobs.
Ford saying, nope, we're not going to build in Mexico. We'll build it in Detroit. We have, you know, all of the stuff that's splashing the media as far as companies hiring here. That's all good. I'm completely for that. My issue is going to be the other side of the equation, the competing forces. You're going to have a Fed raising interest rates. They said that they want to raise rates three more times in 2017. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that. This time around, this is the first time the Fed has ever raised rates when the GDP, gross domestic product, growth of our economy, was below 4.5%. The third quarter, GDP was 3.2. The quarter before that was 1.something. I don't know what the fourth quarter number is yet. But that's not strong growth. And to be raising rates in that environment, granted, we're going from next to nothing to, we were at, but we went from 0.5 to 0.75. I mean, relatively speaking, historically speaking, it's a very low number, but it's still a rising rate. It's still going to be added expenses. We have a debt problem. I don't know if anyone's aware. We have a debt problem personally, and we also have a debt problem as a country. We are getting close to, if you believe what the government tells us, $20 trillion. A trillion is a really big number.
Really big number.
So if we have rising rates, that means the interest on our debt is getting more expensive. That's a drag on the economic growth. We have a deficit. Each year, we, as a country, we spend more money than we collect in taxes. So if Trump is going to be reducing all these taxes, I still haven't seen anything in regards to reduction in expenses. You know, if it gets, you know, I'm going to get rid of the EPA, I'm going to do this and that. A lot of these things in the election cycle were great to hear, but in practicality, very difficult to do. So which side of this pendulum is going to win out? Is it going to be Trumponomics, or is it going to be some of the things we're facing, debt, rising rates? It's going to be a very unpredictable, interesting year.
Stay tuned, folks, because we have no clue.
So at the end of the day, what and why we started off January, this is our individual planning month, is the theme for this month. How do we manage our portfolios? How do we handle all this? Because, folks, it is going to be another volatile year. And we are going to have some pretty broad swings again like we have in the past. I mean, just look at the run-up that we had at the end of the year, and nothing has changed, guys. Nothing has changed. All we had was a president-elect. So to have a 9% run-up in 7 weeks is crazy. And you know, so we're going to see that. You got to have a plan. You got to have a personal budget. And we're going to be talking about these things for the month of January. My suggestion is double the plans that you've done. So if you do a revisit of your plan once a year, do it twice this year. If you do it twice, do it quarterly. Do it four times. Not that you have to take a whole lot of work, but at least revisit it and look at it. And to do it more than quarterly is pretty insane, so I wouldn't suggest that. But if you're not doing one at all, at least do one. If you're doing one, then do two. If you're doing two, then try and do it quarterly, because that will give you some peace of mind if you have a plan and a budget in place that you're on the right track. And those short-term variations in the stock market won't have you completely stressed out.
Well, you have to have a long-term plan. And I ran across several situations over the holidays, John, that we haven't spoken about yet. But I just have to kind of scratch my head. At least I have hair there. I'm sorry, the glare was kind of distracting me.
Okay. But yes, I have a head for radio, folks.
I told him he forgot his hat. But there are a couple of situations I do have to scratch my head and wonder where these folks were subjected to the lack of common sense.
Because you read my story for Strange News Stories Indeed for this
sense.
Week.
one individual we ran across, they had, and just to give you some of the general numbers, they had a family income in excess of $100,000. They have a home where they reside, and they ran into some issues with home repairs, evidently roof issues and some heating system issues. Mm-hmm. And instead of going to a bank or a credit union, and I haven't seen their credit score, but that was one of the pieces of advice I gave them, to go out to annualcreditreport.com, write it down, annualcreditreport.com, and run one or all three if you feel so inclined, the Equifax, the Experian, and the TransUnion credit reports. If they had a decent credit report of, you know, 680 and above, 700 and above, they certainly would, with that type of income, would have been able to borrow, you know, money to repair the house and so forth. But instead, they maxed out all their credit cards. So they ended up with $34,000 in debt on credit cards, paying, you know, upwards of 15%. Then they became so distraught that they ended up taking a title loan for their car. So now I think that one calculated out to about 750% interest based on the repayment terms they had on their title loan. So, I mean, these things are just beyond belief in my mind. Why would anyone take those drastic steps other than just lack of a budget, lack of a plan, lack of anyone assisting them? You know, we would love to help any of our clients or anyone out there to manage their financial plan. And even if they feel like they have no plan and they have no money to have a plan, at least get some help in taking a look at what you're currently doing in terms of not ruining your credit, if you have any at all at this point. And getting, you know, title loans are absolutely the worst possible place to borrow money. If you have a car and you actually have the title, it's not there to go borrow money. It's kind of like, you know, borrowing money from your 401k. It's for retirement. It's not for interim expenditures unless it is an emergency of some type. And the other situation that I ran into was, you know, an individual who had actually taken out a car loan, and the credit union, in this case, put him in a car loan at 12% interest, and his credit is in the 700s. So I don't understand that, other than the fact that he didn't know any better and that he didn't realize that 12% was not a good interest rate for a car loan. In a personal loan with almost 19% interest for a fairly small amount of money, again, not asking the questions, not just having basic knowledge that these are both ridiculous numbers, and by refinancing both of those could drop his monthly payment by, you know, almost $200 a month, all of that going to interest. So there are a lot of basic things out there that the public is not aware of and doesn't understand what are common interest rates, what are the things you should do, what you should prioritize in terms of, if I need money, you know, always set aside or try and set aside an emergency fund. You got a little money sitting there to repair the hole in a roof or cut down the tree that's fallen on it or whatever it happens to be, in addition to your insurance. And that's another area of saving. You know, insurance is expensive relative to your need. If your house never burns down, you never have an accident or damage, then you're paying something and getting nothing. But the other side of the coin is, what if something happens? Your house burns down. I do have personal knowledge of friends who have had, you know, inadvertent fires started by, you know, a dryer heating vent that didn't get cleaned and started a fire in the house in a laundry room, or something was left on the stove and created a fire, or water heater, whatever it happens to be. Accidents happen. So you have to have coverage. So I would invite you to shop your insurance coverage, because I've seen rates change by as much as 50% for similar, if not better, coverage on the same type of peril that's out there. So, you know, having some basic common sense, having a plan, going back to our first show, which is on the website, of course, at www.thefinancialcafe.us. We have our podcasts out there. The first one was How to Choose a Financial Advisor. I got a call the other day from the father and mother of a current client of mine. They've been talking about coming in for about 2 years, and they finally made the phone call and said, you know, we need to come in and talk. We're not happy with what's going on. We're not happy with the communication we're getting from our current advisor. You know, let's sit down and have a conversation, and we are doing that next week. So it's never too late to sit down and take a look at what you're doing, what objectives, goals you have, and are you on track to meeting those? Because in the changing rate environments, whether it's interest rate environments or the fact that the market has run up substantially, we are looking at more of the same in terms of appropriate planning, asset allocation, a well-diversified portfolio with a few tweaks you know, we may be a little wary of bonds because as interest rates rise, of course, the value, the inherent value of the bond goes down. But if it's managed properly with the proper types of bonds in your portfolio, that's not necessarily a bad thing. So get a plan. You know, as John said, if you do it once a year, do it twice. Do it quarterly. It can't hurt. Just see if you're on track. Are you moving in the right direction? Or is it time to throw up the red flag and go, wait a minute, maybe we need to take a look at this and see if it's still heading towards where we need to be. That's my thought, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay. That was informational little tangent there, Mr. Lexell. So that will wrap up our Market Talk segment, which then ties into the segue for the topic of the week, which is sponsored by Chef Shop.
The Chef Shop, located in Edwardsville. If you weren't there over the holidays, you need to go now because what a crazy place. They had all kinds of things going on with sales and all types of gifts. If you couldn't find something in there for yourself or your family, then you weren't looking. They're located at 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville, in the Schnucks Plaza right next to Target. Both Scott and Nancy are regrouping by now. I suspect after the sale, the after Christmas sale, a half off. It was buy one, get one half off on pretty much everything except popcorn, fudge, and, you know, coffee. But besides that, everything else was buy one, get one half off on the next one. And they're regrouping, getting ready to place some new spring orders, getting geared up for the spring, and lots of coffee, lots of fudge, lots of popcorn, all of which I enjoyed over the holidays, by the way. So go in and see them, say hi. Don't forget to tell them that you were listening to the show because they still have T-shirts. They still have some coffee mugs that they would be happy to give you at our request for listening to the show.
Excellent. So our topic for this week is what do you need to gather, what statements, documents, and things like that do you need to gather to have a financial plan done? And as Larry mentioned, this ties in back to our very first show, which was on July 9th, 2016. You can go back and listen to that podcast, but that was based on how to pick an advisor. And what we want to go through now is kind of our top 10 list of statements, things that you would need to gather that your financial advisor should be asking you for to put together a good financial plan. Obviously, the first one is all your investment account statements, bank account, IRAs, 401ks, anything where you have investments. You're going to need copies of that for your advisor because they're going to need to put that into their software.
And this is a perfect time to do that, John, because obviously the 12/31/16 numbers, these statements are already becoming available online, or if you have them mailed to you, you'll be getting them, if not this week, certainly by the end of next week. So when you get those year-end statements, instead of throwing them in a drawer, take a folder, label it financial plan, and drop them in there because those are all the things that we need to get a view of what you currently have. That's a today shot. This is where we're at. This is what we've accumulated. And, you know, I'll have to draw the analogy to going to your physician. When I go in for an annual checkup with my physician, it's like, well, tell me about anything different that's going on, anything new, any problems that you've had, any questions you have. They want to know how you are dealing with the current plan, whether it's your medications or financially speaking, with satisfied with the results you're seeing. And more importantly, you know, what can I do to help you? Where would you like to go? What are your goals, objectives? It's back to the old, you know, having a written plan, having specific time frames and objectives, implementing the plan, and then monitoring it. And we would just, again, we're going to repeat this many, many times, voice that this is probably a good time to monitor it a little more often than you might otherwise. If you're that I'll take a look at it once a year type person, well, you better do it twice or maybe three or four times because we're going to see some volatility. We're going to see some changes in the market. We're going to see some action. We're going to see some reaction to what the president, as soon as he gets sworn in, does, as well as the Republican Congress and Senate. And that would be a good opportunity to discuss with your financial advisor how it would affect your long-term goals and objectives to make sure that you're still on track.
The second item that you should bring or have ready to go is if you are working for an employer, bring in your benefit statements. Bring in copies of what is available to you, whether it's, you know, through short-term disability, through buying additional life insurance, through your 401k provisions. You know, what is the company match, if there is a company match? What is the profit? You know, all of that should be pulled together, because your advisor is going to be able to say, okay, let's be strategic about how we invest our money. The company does this match. Let's start there, get our savings to take advantage of the match. Then let's move over to a Roth IRA. More directional type of advice by providing those statements, that information to your advisor. The third one would be your insurance. If you have term insurance, cash value life insurance, if you have annuities, not only, yeah, I have an annuity, here's a statement, but bring in the contract, bring in the provisions so we can, or your advisor can look at it and say, okay, you know what? The surrender is up on this annuity. It's a really bad annuity. It's expensive. You don't have very many investment options. Let's find a different type of solution for you where you can do an exchange and it doesn't cost you anything. And you're out of your surrender, that type of information.
We have no preconceived notion. There is no, you know, we'll do this, do that, until we actually get into evaluating what you currently have. And talking about the retirement plan, probably the best thing you can do. I get a lot of clients saying, well, I really don't know what my match is or the company contribution. You should have been given a document called an SPD, or summary plan description. That is the plain English version of what the adoption agreement, the trust agreement for the qualified plan is based upon, and it will give you what the match is. It may say it's discretionary, or I had a plan the other day I sent information out on that it was in the actual document that they would match 50% of the first 4% that the employee put in. The employee seemed to have a little difficulty understanding that, but simply, if they put in 4%, the company puts in 2%. So we're able to determine what those specific matches or profit-sharing contributions might be and take a look at if you're with a large company like Boeing or Monsanto or Anheuser-Busch or some of the others where they have incentives built in on a consistent, regular basis, whether they're bonuses or stock options, whatever they happen to be. Those are all things that need to be added to the plan. And we don't just look at the totals. This is one common misunderstanding that we have is many times they'll bring it and say, well, I've got, you know, $50,000 or $250,000 in my 401k. Well, that's great. If you have anything at all, that's great. But how is it invested? You know, what are the specific underlying investments? What are the fees on the underlying investments? Are there any additional charges you're paying relating to that? Is there an upfront sales charge, a back-end sales charge? Are there surrender charges? We need to get down into the nitty-gritty of understanding exactly what you have, much of which no one probably has ever explained to you. And if they did, your eyes may have rolled back and said, nah, not my problem. But it is your problem. It is your future. And if you don't understand, you may be missing the boat. We had another plan I talked about previously. We enrolled 2 weeks ago, and this, well, just a couple of days ago, we received the enrollment forms on all of the participants. Another interesting thing I discovered, this is with one of the more popular, well-known fund companies out there in the industry, and they now are asking the employer to enter all of the employee or participant information to enroll their participants into the plan. That's not the way it's been done the last 20 plus years I've been in the business. So even the companies are starting to push back and push down a lot of the work that is being done, and liability, quite frankly, for entering participant information. So another free piece of advice: when you fill out your enrollment form, print. I've seen some enrollment forms this week, in fact, that I had no clue what their name was because it was illegible, and we didn't know they were trying to invest 110%, And it just delays the process in terms of entering them into the plan and making sure that they actually do get the contribution when the payroll is run and that it actually is invested as they have chosen. Because when they pick funds that really are not funds that are available on their plan, it's not going to get invested in those. It may go to the default, the qualified default investment alternative, but make sure that it is legible and that as a third-party administration company, we take that burden off of our employers to enter all the participants, and we actually did it for them, which is a little unusual. We don't know of too many other companies out there that are doing that at this point. That's all I got, John.
Okay. Okay. So far we talked about bring all your investment account statements, all your employee benefit information, your personal insurance policies or annuity, including contracts and specifics of those policies. Bring a copy of your Social Security statement. If you're younger, just throw it away because it's meaningless. Just kidding. Bring a copy of your Social Security statement because that's potential future income in retirement that would need to be calculated and accounted for in your retirement plan. A copy of your tax return, 1 or 2 years. 2 years, you know, the more information we have, the better information we can provide you. So that's important. Debt information. Larry had talked about that. Bring copies of your auto insurance, or not auto insurance, auto loans, copies of home.
Mortgage
and, you know, the interest rates that you're paying, because if we can do some refinancing and help you reduce expenses, that means more money for savings and more things that you can do to plan for retirement. So credit cards, all the specifics associated, personal loans, all that, all your debt information would need to be accounted for in the plan. If you have children.
Ah, yes, children.
Yes. Are you planning on paying for college? If you are, then that needs to be factored in. That would be a future steep expense. Do you have 529 plans set up? Your budget, and when we talk about budget, we have to differentiate between needs and wants. And there's a very big difference there. The software that we use, we can actually distinguish that. And the program takes care of the needs first. And then we'll go and run the analysis to start taking care of some of the wants to see what is available, which makes it nice. But you're going to have a budget done. If you're going to sit down with an advisor, they're going to go through a budget with you because they need to figure out where the money's going and how much additional money can be put towards savings. Larry's leaning into the microphone. He's going to speak.
Speak. I'm following after Declan and Liam.
There we go. Yeah.
Yeah, speak.
They're here.
Yeah, they're here.
Say hello, Declan. Hello, Declan.
Yeah, it was great. Loved it. Don't be offended working with your financial advisor at some of the questions that we are, quite frankly, I've always asked in my 25 plus years of advising folks on a holistic basis. That's another word that's being thrown around for 2017. A lot of advisors, a lot of broker dealers, a lot of investment folks are now talking about becoming holistic advisors, something that we've done forever. And by invasive questions, I'm talking about health questions.
Oh, you're not talking about like herbs and spices?
Herbs and spices. Okay. But, you know, if you want to share a recipe, we'll take that too. But questions about not only your medical history, your current medical situation.
You stole my thunder. That's item number 9 on my list.
But also about your family's medical history. Is that 10?
No, that's number 9A.
Oh, 9A. I got 9 and 9A.
Folks, if you haven't learned about Larry and I am the free-flowing. No, actually, I am the one that has lists. I'm the anal one of this team, and Larry is much more.
Careful now.
I know. I'm going to let you say it. What's the word
careful
I'm looking
now. For? Free and easy?
Yes, more laid back. So, mm-hmm. You know, I'm constantly like, since you can't see what we're doing, I'm constantly like giving him the hook, you know, okay, like, come on, bring it back. Come on, come back here. I got a list I got to take care of.
I like tangential topics.
I know. And I always have to pull it back to my list. So,
back to the list, John. Go ahead.
No. I'm just going to cross off 9 and 9A right now.
We're going to need a bigger counter so you can spread out.
All right, so 9 and 9A, so go ahead and continue with family health history.
Well, family health history, why is that important? Well, I'll tell you why that's important. Because the prediction currently for a 65-year-old couple retiring now, as there are some 10,000 of us, I'm not quite there yet, but 10,000 65-year-olds retiring or reaching that point every day, if you can imagine that, they're going to have to spend between $250,000 and $300,000 during their retirement years just for medical expenses. Think about that for a minute. If they're retiring with, let's say, $500,000, maybe Social Security, maybe a little pension, depending on their needs, and they live pretty conservatively, but you drop in now a $250,000 expense, that can blow up a lot of budgets. That can blow up a lot of goals and objectives. Hereditary is an issue. We know much more about genetics today than we ever have. It's not the end all, the beats all, but if you have a history genetically of heart disease, of diabetes, or any of the other cancer for that matter, those are things that ought to really be discussed in terms of the planning process, because many of them can be predicted. Many of them can be diagnosed early, and early diagnosis is the key. And it brings to mind, we have an organization in our building, which is the Center for Autism and CARD, C-A-R-D, Center for Autism and Related Disorders, who have joined us. They're home-based in California, and they have discovered some pretty amazing things for those folks who have autism or related disorders, that if it is properly diagnosed, and that's part of the problem, prior to 5 years old, then in many cases, it can't be cured, but it can be almost mitigated in terms of the child's future. So there are amazing things happening out there in terms of the world of diagnosis and treatment of even some of the most devastating situations in terms of autism and other disorders. So if you want to learn more about that, send me an email. I'll get you in touch with the right people. Another tangent there, John, but you know, I just thought I'd throw it out there.
I'm just sitting back listening.
So, I'm just full of it.
That's one way of looking at it, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Okay, so...
information.
Family health history. That's going to be important. One of my big questions, and again, as Larry alluded to, political correctness does not apply when you sit down with a financial advisor. I mean, we tend to be very blunt and not sugarcoat things. We're not being disrespectful, but we need to, you know, gather good data to produce good information for you to use and evaluate. But family health, not autism. Now you got me thinking about autism.
family health.
Maybe I have it. What's it called when you lose your memory, Larry?
Old age.
No.
Dementia?
Dementia. Yeah. What's the other word for it? I just, you lost me on autism today.
Yeah, go ahead. I don't know.
Dementia, what's the other word for dementia? Anyway, what's that disease called?
We'll come back to that.
Okay, we'll come back to that. We both have it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, if you have a family health history of dementia or other related dementia-type disorders, and obviously Larry and I do, that's a big deal because you can suffer from that and still be perfectly healthy. And your medical expenses go up because you may have to be placed in a home. You may have to have someone come in and take care of you. And that can go on for years and years and years, which can rack up the expenses. So we are going to be asking those types of questions. And if the new fiduciary rule goes through as it is proposed, we are going to be required to ask those types of questions. Not that we're trying to get nosy about your personal business, as a lot of people kind of get taken aback when those questions are asked. But in order to put together a strong financial plan, your advisor should be asking those questions. So to kind of do a quick little recap here, we said statements, all your employee benefit information, insurance and annuity contract details, Social Security statements, copies of at least one, hopefully two tax returns, all the debt information you have, credit cards, mortgage, and so forth, your family health history, budget. We're going to, you know, it should be required that you have a budget. We're going to put a budget together. And not the last one, but item number 8 on my list, since we skipped to 9, we'll come back to number 8. have your goals and dreams. It's supposed to be fun. This is something that you're planning to do. Write down what are the things that you would like to accomplish. You know, made it pretty clear. I would like to have a boat. I would like to go fishing a lot in my retirement. They are all things that...
Not in his backyard.
No. But, you know, that's on my list. They are dreams. They are not needs, but they are wants for right now. And hopefully, you know, through proper planning and so forth, we'll get to accomplish that. So make it fun. Dream big. Put it down on paper. Run the analysis and see. Maybe it's not... You know, a $100,000 vacation. Or maybe it's a $75,000 vacation. Or maybe, you know, whatever it may be. And the last item on my list is a great segue to what we're going to talk about next week. But your list of questions for your advisor or the person, your potential advisor. We're going to next week. We will talk about what are the things you need to be asking he or she, said advisor, potential advisor. But have those questions written down, as Larry has talked about many times. When you do a plan, get the stuff written down because, one, you don't forget it. Like, I still can't think of what the...
Alzheimer's.
Thank you. Golly.
You notice who remembered that.
Yeah, the old one. Well, you know, they say it's a short-term part. The long-term sticks around. So maybe you do have Alzheimer's, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that is it. I knew it was... boy, that is bad. So anyway...
I have one more thing, John.
You have one more thing?
I have one more thing.
Bring it.
One more thing.
It's not on my list.
So, well, put it down. What, number 12?
Okay, no, 10, I have no, 10. 11. It was okay, a top so 10 11. List, so I do have 10, so, but I did have some A's and B's in there.
Number 11 on your list is to bring in, if you have a will or trust, powers of attorney or health care directives, because those are things that I always ask to see, and people... it's very common. I get one or two answers. No, I do not have any of that. Why do I need it? I'm young. I'm, you know, going to live a long time. You know, et cetera, et cetera. And I like to share with them, especially if they have children. That's near and dear to my heart. That if you have children and you don't have your own will, the state has one for you. And many people don't realize that if something happens to both, obviously, if something happens to the husband. Then the spouse or significant other will move into that role of 100% guardian. But if something happens to both of you, which does happen occasionally in an accident type situation, then the state moves in. The kids go into the state system and are cared for until such time that a judge can, working with an attorney, can appoint a guardian. I think it's called a guardian ad litem. We have several folks working in that capacity that we're familiar with in our office, and that attorney now is acting in the role of father, mother, guardian for the child in the determination of who is next in line. Is it a brother or sister? Is it a grandparent? Or is it a niece or nephew? Who is next in line and capable of taking care of the kids? So if you don't have a will, well, actually you do. The state has one, and you need to be aware of what it says. So as a basis, we always encourage our clients to get a will. You know, upon first death, everything goes to the survivor. Upon second death, if you have children, that's potentially pretty easy, unless you're going to disinherit them. That's another show. It goes to the kids.
On an
equal basis. If one of the kids, and I do have clients in this situation, one of the kids has special needs. Then you don't want to just dump, you know, doesn't matter, $5,000, $50,000, $500,000 onto a person who has special needs. This particular one, he would go out and buy every Superman anything, costume, toy, statue that was in existence because he loves Superman. That probably wouldn't be good for his future. So then you get in a situation of appointing someone to be guardian, as well as someone to oversee the finances for the special needs person. So you may need a special needs trust. We won't go into detail on trust, but if you have one, when was the last time you reviewed it? Because many times trusts are done. Oh, yeah, we did a trust 20, 25 years ago. And, the kids are grown now, right? Yeah, the kids are grown. Well, does the trust reflect that or not? No, we haven't looked at it. So always, you know, wills, you got to have at least power of attorney, healthcare directives. I know I'm on my bandstand, but I'm going to keep going, John. You know, once your kids become of age, the state of Illinois, 18 years old, and they go away to college, as a parent, and I'm in that position, you no longer have authority over them in terms of healthcare or medical information access, even to their grades. You know, if they were going to SIUE and you requested a transcript, they would have to get the student to sign off to give you one, even though you're paying the bill or maybe paying the bill. So powers of attorney for the spouse, for the kids, are always very, very important, as well as healthcare directives, because you just never know when you might need one. So that's number 11. Add it to the list.
I like it.
And
other than that, on time?
We are down to 10 minutes.
10 minutes. Okay. So that was our top 11 list for the information that you should gather and have ready to go when you select your advisor. I mean, obviously, your first meeting, maybe even your second meeting, you're just trying to get a feel for, do you like this person? Do you trust this person? And so forth. But once you actually make that decision, okay, I am going to work with this person as my financial advisor, that meeting you would need to then have all these different documents and things gathered, because they're going to ask for it anyway. So, or hopefully they will ask for it. If you're also looking for additional information or our thoughts or any of Larry's other tangents, you can go back to July 9th in our podcast on our website, which is www.the. Is it the or the?
Yes.
Okay. TheFinancialCafe.us. And I still think I have Alzheimer's. At least I remembered what to call it now.
TheFinancialCafe.us is where you find us. You may also contact John or myself at LLEXO, that's LLEXOW, at nickelfinancial.com, or John Graney, J Graney, GRANEY, at nickelfinancial.com. Send us your questions. Another thing that we do look at, we are not CPAs, we do not give tax advice, but
we have played them on TV.
The years that I've been in the business, at least, as John likes to point out, I've had a lot of experience looking at tax returns and looking at what I consider some very obvious areas that may or may not be missed by your accountant, bookkeeper, or if you happen to do them yourself on TurboTax. It catches a lot of the common areas, but there are some others that are not so common that you may miss. So by reviewing the tax return, oftentimes we can help you save on taxes or tax strategies that you may or may not be familiar with, so that down the road, as he said, you'll have more money to be able to invest in your future.
Know what I did notice with this new format?
What's that, John?
Going to need more coffee.
We are going to need more coffee.
So, okay. Moving along, our next segment, so this, before we do the wrap-up, is our strange news story indeed. And this segment is brought to you by Premier Fiduciary Services, that, in full disclosure, is my company. But we provide 401k services for business owners, trustees, and so forth. And I will just leave it at that, because I don't want to get in too much of self-dealing.
Don't want to get into that, John.
So, but I will sponsor Strange News Stories Indeed for this week. And my news story, getting into budgets, Christmas, this article that I read pulled everything together. A woman in England, and I have the picture here. I'm showing it to Larry now.
Nice picture.
Okay.
The dogs, too.
She spent £1,250. If you then convert that to dollars, that's $1,600 on Christmas presents for her dogs. She doesn't have a lot. She has two dogs. There is the picture I'm looking at. This room is covered in wrapped presents for her dog. $1,600 on two dogs. Now, the kicker on this was, in the article, it says she spent more on her dogs than she did her boyfriend.
What does that say about priorities, John?
So if I was this guy, I'd either grow a tail, or I would be looking move into a different direction in my relationships, but I'm flipping through here, and very cute dogs. One is a little Bichon, one is a yellow lab. I have two dogs, folks. I don't think I spent $50 on their presents. Some bones, some chew toys, and they're good. What can you get for $1,500, $1,600? Look at these presents around this dog.
That's a little obsessive, I think, John, because...
So this gets in, I hope it was in her budget.
We hope.
You know, she states that, you know, I don't have children, this is where I'm going to spend my money. It's her business, but I found it to be a little bit insane, and I thought it was a strange news story indeed.
Well, staying along with that theme, John, of dogs and how they are becoming somewhat treated as same as people, I have a client. Very good client. And
tell me the dogs in the will.
They have no children. They have a nephew who they adore and try and help out whenever they can. Mom has passed away. So it's basically they don't have any direct lineage left other than their dogs. They always have a, and I consider, may not be an appropriate word, but a giant poodle. Because the poodle standing here, the poodle could rest his head on the counter.
Oh, one of the standard poodles.
Yeah, big boy.
Yeah, they're beautiful dogs.
They are beautiful dogs, and we've stayed with them when we visited where they live, and they're just very, very close, very good friends. And we have gone through a financial plan. He is now retired, and they're enjoying the good life, literally, doing what they want to do in retirement on a day-to-day basis. The poodle goes everywhere with them, and in their will, they have set up a trust that will go to the poodle should he survive them at some future point. Now, exactly how that's going to work, I don't know, but they did have an attorney draw that up, and the poodle is going to be richer than a lot of people that I work with.
Who was that lady, very, very wealthy lady that... It was in the news probably about a year ago, and she left everything from the estate to her two dogs.
I do remember that.
I can't remember her name. Again, Alzheimer's kicking in. But yes, I do remember it's Alzheimer's.
That's true. It's not dementia.
But anyway, yeah, dementia and other related
disorders.
Dementia disorders.
Yeah. All right.
But, she did the same thing, too. I can't think of her name.
So
news story. So who are you going to vote for? You go to... www.thefinancialcafe.us. I told you I needed more coffee.
You do.
And you can vote. Also, when you're out there, if you forgot, as I seem to be doing a lot this show, you forgot our email addresses, they can be found on that the Financial Cafe website as well. And you can shoot us your vote. And then
we'll choose a winner.
Which one is the winner? The fact that this lady spent $1,600 or the fact that someone has their dog, a trust set up for their dog in their will. Whoever the winner is will then get in contact with you and send you a T-shirt.
It's going to be close, John. I don't know. You know, $1,600 for presents for a dog. I know we bought our daughter's dog.
But remember in my story, because I want you to vote for my story, the kicker is she spent more on her dog
than her boyfriend.
She did on her boyfriend.
I'm not going to say anything about that at all because, it just wouldn't be appropriate.
Like I said, the guy needs to grow a tail. Maybe he'll get some extra Christmas presents.
maybe he doesn't want any. I don't know. But, yeah, vote for it. We want to thank Premier Fiduciary Services for sponsoring our segment today, as well as the Chef Shop, Nancy and Scott, where we hope to have one or both of them on in a week or two to be talking about the Christmas season, what they do, and how else we can help support them in terms of underwriting the show. For those of you who would like to hear more of the show, you can go to our podcasts on, again, www.thefinancialcafe.us and listen to all of the, gosh, John, what do we have, 27, 28 shows in the can now? So a lot of shows out there, every topic, life insurance, annuities, you name it, it's all out there. So Be sure to jump online, take a look at those. Let me know if you need more information. If you have a question, even if you have a financial advisor, that's okay. If you have a question they haven't answered, or you want a second opinion, or just some more information, shoot it to us. We'd be happy to get you that to help you out in the new year. So wrapping up our first one-hour show, John.
Need more coffee.
In 60 minutes. I think that's an hour.
Absolutely. So our topic for the day was a top 10, which ended up being 11 things that you need to gather for an advisor. Next week, the market segment will be, we're going to discuss rising interest rates and what's going on, how that will affect you personally. And then our topic of the day will be the coming up with 10, and we'll probably end up with 11, but 10 questions that you should ask your advisor when you go and meet with them.
Sounds like a great lineup, John. Coming up next week, thank you to WSIE, to Steve Jankowski and Daryl McQuinn for helping us get things set up and going. Behind the microphone again at WSIE 88.7, The Sound, on the campus of SIUE in Edwardsville. Help support the radio station. We want to keep it on the air. Their underwriting opportunities abound.
And we're looking for sponsors, segment sponsors.
And we're looking for sponsors. So till next week, we will talk to you on the radio. Thank you.
Have a great week, everybody.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.